Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, the Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. Children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. Please go to the website foundation@hearstcastle.com to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Greens Restaurant on the waterfront in San Francisco.
Adam Michalik, I'm the executive director of Greens Restaurant.
Not a bad gig, huh?
It's a good gig. Never a bad day at Greens. Good food, good view, good people.
Tell us about the philosophy, the Greens Restaurant on the waterfront. What's closest to your heart?
What's great about Greens is the people and the culture that we've built. Greens was originally started in 1979 by the San Francisco Zen Center. But what we're proud of the most today, besides the excellent food that we serve, is the legacy of staff that have been with us for generations.
It's pretty rare, isn't it?
It's very rare. Staff members that have been in our kitchen for over 30 years. We've been intentional in creating a family environment and treating people with respect and honoring the work that they do.
Talk to us about some of your greater good associations that you work with.
Our main charity this year that we're working with is Foodwise. They are focused on bringing food justice.
Explain that. What is food justice?
Food justice is a program that provides quality food to areas that are underrepresented with things like farmers markets and balanced nutrition, and focuses on food education so people can make healthy choices in their lives and not rely on some of the fast food options and the quick and easy options that are available.
So that implies they're in the schools, right, in the classroom?
Yeah, food education is a major component of what it is to bring about food justice.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, back to your home zone. Here we are, Greens on the waterfront. What else comes to mind that you're most proud of here?
One of the things that I am most proud of is making it through and surviving the pandemic.
How did you do that? That's an interesting one.
Part of what Chef Katie and I were challenged to do was introducing takeout food for the first time.
And have you continued that model at all?
Yeah, so these revenue streams are still alive today. But one of the biggest challenges was, you know, how are our guests and clientele going to receive that? And how are we going to grow after the pandemic with them, which is kind of what led us to this food series. But reinventing the restaurant and scaling it from 7 people during the pandemic upwards to just over 90 where we're at today has been the challenge.
But it's working.
It's working. We're doing great things. We hired a new executive chef, Chef Katie, during the pandemic, and now we are partnering her with a good peer group, making sure that she has the resources that she needs to succeed, and our guests are really enjoying it.
Your front row center right on the waterfront in the Marina area of San Francisco. I bet, though, you bump into a San Franciscan that didn't know you existed, right?
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day. So I love San Francisco. I am also a transplant to San Francisco. I've been here for just over 3.5 years. But every day I run into somebody who has heard of Greens but has not been. It talks about kind of the changing population in San Francisco, especially with the tech community as they come and go. You know, a lot of the established restaurants aren't as buzzy as some of the new trending restaurants are.
And some of the old classics have gone away.
Many of the classics have gone away, and some have gone away and thankfully have come back. But, you know, there's some heartbreak stories out there like Cliff House, and then there's some heartwarming.
Is Cliff House going to come back?
It's my understanding that they're coming back.
Yeah, I've heard some rumors of that.
That's what I'm hearing in the rumor mill in this industry. When you hear the rumor, often there's a little bite to that.
Yeah. So back to Greens.
Sure.
Closest to your heart, things you're most proud of.
A great work-life culture here. We really respect people. And in doing so, we focus on paying people for the value of their work and respecting work-life balance, giving people the opportunity to have vacations, you know, really focusing on what makes a business thrive more than profits.
And I heard rumors that you guys have fun. while you're working. Yeah.
We do have fun. Yeah. There's always haptics that happen in the restaurant industry, but working this closely with the individuals that work at Greens definitely, you know, allows for a lot of time to bond and a lot of good stories and anecdotes that come from that.
I love it. To learn more about your world, where would you direct somebody?
To learn more about Greens Restaurant, go to greensrestaurant.com. My name is Adam Mishlick.
Adam, thank you so much.
Thank you.
My name is Katie Riker. I'm the executive chef at Greens Restaurant in San Francisco.
Wow. How did you get that job? That's really cool.
Yeah. So I first started at Greens in 2015 when I was 21, and I was an intern for the Culinary Institute of America. And my goal really was just to move as far away from my hometown in New York as I possibly could, as any 21-year-old would want. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do something focused on vegetables. So Greens was kind of the best spot to do that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I spent 4 months here as an intern, went back and finished school. I went to CIA, like I said. And
when you entered CIA, mm-hmm. were you going in organic? Vegetarian.
Yeah.
So you knew from the get-go that's what you wanted to focus on.
Yeah. Culinary school is actually a kind of a career change for me. I started out at Cornell University studying nutrition. I was an athlete. I was really focused on health, and vegetarian kind of was natural for me.
Were you born a vegetarian?
No.
So there was some epiphanous moment in your maturation time where a light went on. Tell us what happened and what made you change your food ways.
When I was growing up, one side, my dad's side is Italian American. I'm third generation. And my mom's side, I'm Ukrainian American. So also third generation. It was food everywhere, lots of heavy, rich food. So I'd say kind of like I'm the granddaughter of Red Sauce America. And then there's pierogies and kielbasa and heavy stuff on the other side.
Lots of sausage,
yeah. Lots of heavier things. So when I was growing up, I was super athlete, super into health. I always loved cooking too, even though I never really considered it something for a career until much later.
Intrinsic in the move was healthy diet, right?
Yeah, that's where it all started. Yeah. But there's so many other benefits too, right? I mean, it's great for the environment.
A naive question, you get a lot of people say, yeah, but how about the proteins without meat, you know? And so legumes, how do you replace that?
Yeah, lots of legumes, beans, tofu is one thing. We're not really big on meat replacements here. And in my personal life, I'm not into that sort of processed stuff either. But
it seems kind of fake to begin with, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Give me the real thing or let's move on.
Yeah, and you know, I think there are other sources of protein that people don't think about. Like cheese is a great source of protein. So I think some people think, well, cheese isn't very healthy for you, but in the right doses, if you're thoughtful about your meals, then you could get a lot of protein.
Stay away from cheese curds.
Right.
Okay, so a little bit more about your evolution. You decided to forget pro sports, right? And you shifted to culinary school. Talk to us about that journey at CIA and how things evolved for
you. When I was at Cornell, I was pretty bored to tears, really. I mean, it was cold. Everybody was studying all the time. I was a smarty pants. I mean, don't get me wrong. I had great grades and everything. But once I was in college, I kind of felt that I would be doing more hands-on work and actually being in offices and working with patients. Not right away, of course, but just having to take 8 semesters of chem was enough to just get me out of there. So I dropped out and had no idea what to do with my life. And after a couple months of being home, I was just kind of like, you know what? I'm going to just get a job and we're going to figure it out from there. And that job was at a bakery in my town. I learned how to do wedding cakes and all sorts of wholesale production. And 3 months into that job, I was enrolled in CIA.
Really?
It was pretty quick. I was like, okay, I could do this for a job.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Tell us about your journey through CIA. Did you have to just follow the regimen and the program?
Yeah. A lot of the people at CIA already had at least some experience in kitchens. I was a little unique where I went from a baking job to actually the culinary side of things. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to hold a knife, chopped half my thumb off the third week. went down to the nurse, came back up 20 minutes later and finished my knife tray. You know, it was a grind. It was a lot of studying and practicing. And mm-hmm. the library did have culinary books, but on the second floor, there's actually a table with just 10 cases of potatoes. So students would go to the library to practice their knife skills. It was so different, but it was so hands-on and so much fun. Mm-hmm. And you're in class 8 hours a day. I mean, it's just like a real kitchen.
Has it served you well? Are you really glad you went there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Knowing those tricks now is really helpful.
So it'd be technique and tricks would be one of the takeaways, right?
Definitely. Technique, really learning how to do things by feel, getting it all done in a timely manner. Culinary school isn't meant to, I guess, grow a chef. It's meant to grow a line cook, but it helps you stay away from some bad habits that you might pick up if you learned from a kitchen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really cool. Okay. So next evolution, you graduate, or before you graduated, you were here as an intern, right?
Right. Yeah. So before your second year starts, you have to go off to do an externship. I chose Greens. It was the four greatest months. I learned a lot. I had a lot of fun. And I chose Greens not only because of the vegetarian aspect, but because a lot of restaurants that do externships, they don't actually teach you how to be a line cook. They'll have you in a refrigerated room peeling grapes, and I didn't want to do that. So mm-hmm. Greens was also really nice. Annie told me that I'd be right on the line, I'd be treated just like any other employee, so that was really helpful.
So you were sold, you wanted to
come
back after graduation.
Yeah, and the culture here is also so unique.
Describe the culture. How does it exemplify itself in a way that resonates with you?
It's very compassionate. There's a lot of teaching.
Even among coworkers, everybody.
Oh yeah. Everybody helps each other. Mm. There's no kind of one-upsmanship. There's not really any
backstabbing.
There's none of that. No, it's really a lot of team. It's really family focused. Mm-hmm. Some of the people that are in my kitchen have been here for longer than I've been alive.
Yeah. Would you describe it as the next evolution in American business models? Because it's not just here that I hear about this going on.
Yeah. Well, Greens, I would say, has been doing this probably for all 40 years. I can only speak for the time I've been here, but the culture is very deeply ingrained. It's very intrinsic. Mm-hmm. I do think the industry is finally catching up to what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, because back in the day, I've been in some kitchens where you better duck if the chef is in a bad attitude, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I've had a lot of trouble with some other chefs mm-hmm. in my career, but not here. But
right. But that must be one of the reasons why you're so happy here.
Yeah. Yeah. Why I think a lot of people are so happy here. Most people measure their time here in years or decades. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Try and describe, what is Greens? I know it's a hugely amorphous thing, but there's something that makes it what it is, that separates it from other restaurants.
Greens is an institution, really. It's so unique. No matter how many vegetarian things pop up, no matter how many new brands or whatever comes out, Greens is always going to be that original. It's almost untouchable in a way.
Pushing the frontiers?
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, I think we're doing that in kind of, it sounds maybe a little oxymoronic, but we haven't changed our ethos. We've been celebrating vegetables. We've only been working with what's around us, farm to table. And while that's almost sort of a requirement for California restaurants at this point, we're still very much doing that. So while we haven't moved on with vegan meats or cheeses, we continue to push the boundary by just expanding our global reach. So that's kind of what our dinner series is about, by bringing in these chefs who are experts in their cuisines, and it's places that we haven't yet explored.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So it must be fun for you, because you get to learn these little nuances that you never would have thought of if it wasn't for these chefs coming in.
Totally.
Can you think of a fun moment from a guest chef that really resonated with you? They went, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, just a few minutes ago, Aniam and I were in the back making cheese, and I've never done that before. She has some rue, which is an herb that you can't really find in the U.S. that much. She went foraging for it before coming here today, which was so awesome. Hina had really amazing techniques. I mean, Indian cuisine in general just uses a lot of flavors and tempering and spices, and it all comes together in such a beautiful way. And Crystal's menu was so incredible too, because we had access to ingredients that I would never otherwise get access to. I mean, we had a griddle cake made with wild rice that was hand harvested in canoes. Wow. And yeah, and it's cool too, because first of all, they've been doing this for hundreds of, maybe thousands of years, the same exact way. And the grain goes to the community first, and then it goes to indigenous chefs who want to purchase the product. So I would never have access to these things. So having that collaboration, I get to learn and experience, but also respect like that it's
and
a
that's
culture.
Because the woman who's a Native American came here, right?
Right, exactly.
That's so cool. Yeah. So you really celebrate not only food, but life and people here.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Let's turn the table for a moment. The guest chefs that come here, do you ever notice them kind of having their epiphanous moments by being here at Grains?
Yeah, I think there's always an adjustment going into a space you're unfamiliar with. So I see a lot of these chefs really honing in on things that they know, and they jump right in. And once they have those things, like their food and their cuisine and all the prepped vegetables, they kind of dive in and they become the teachers, which is really, really nice. And because it's an unfamiliar space, I find that a lot of chefs that come in are really cool with just rolling with it. So if we don't have something, or they want a little extra of something else, it's really just like cooking in the moment. And it's less about recipes and more about the experience.
You're blessed because you have real long seasons here.
Yes, we do.
Unlike back where you went to college.
Right. Yeah, I think my mom's garden is coming to a close here pretty soon, but I still have my heirloom tomatoes. So I'm pretty happy out here.
Yeah, you might end in November.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's usually what I say. Our cutoff is Halloween for tomatoes.
You do know you're spoiled, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very, very cool. Okay. Tell us the story of the Green Gulch and its connection with Greens, because that's intrinsic, right?
Right. So Greens was originally owned by the San Francisco Zen Center, and Green Gulch Farm is the farm that is on the property in Muir Beach as part of the Zen Center. So it's really collaborative. We get a lot of our produce from them, along with a lot of other farmers in the area. So that was another really wonderful part of having this dinner series that we can give back to Foodwise, which is the nonprofit that supports food justice, food education programs, and runs the farmers markets in the city that Green Gulch attends, and along with a lot of other farmers that we've been using for years.
To learn more about your world, where would you direct somebody?
Yeah, you could visit us at greensrestaurant.com or at greensrestaurant on Instagram. My name is Katie Riker.
Katie, thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Thank you.
Now you gave me an appetite. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Greens on the San Francisco waterfront. We'll see you here.
I'm Christine Farron. I'm with Foodwise. We're the nonprofit that's best known for running the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market, but we do a lot of other education programs
also. I love it. Give us some point by point, some of the coolest educational components of the program.
Do you want to hear about working with kids,
teenagers,
or adults?
Let's start with kids, because they're our future.
They really are. So. We have a program primarily for public school students in first through fifth grade, where they come to the farmers market for a field trip and a cooking class, and they really use the farmers market as their outdoor classroom. They're meeting farmers, exploring, and they're choosing the foods that they want to cook with later, and that kind of empowerment piece is really important, because once they've chosen what they want to eat, then they're far more likely to try new things. And the whole point of that program is to really open their palates.
And you're dealing with some urban kids, right, that have maybe never been on a farm or don't even know where their food comes from.
For sure. I mean, I think that's the case for most people living in urban environments. Mm-hmm. And kids are actually less closed off to trying new things than I think we give them credit for. They form teams, you know, they select things, they chop it, they prepare it, and they make these totally wild dishes that they enjoy, like chard and strawberry salad, and they'll wolf down the whole thing.
Oh, funny. Yeah. Ask for seconds. Mm-hmm. That is hilarious. Yeah, it was with a farm program down by San Luis Obispo, mm-hmm. and she was saying how kids didn't have a clue about chard, and then mm-hmm. they were going nuts over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the mottos of that program is don't yuck my yum. So if you like something and your fellow classmate doesn't, don't yuck their yum, and likewise. The environment itself matters a lot for kids in terms of getting excited to do something different and new. And the Foodwise Kids program is really fun because they start as a field trip in the farmer's market, and they are cooking, and they are meeting growers, and they are learning about seasonality. And then we follow it up with a in the classroom experience so that the teachers don't constantly have to leave the classroom. And then we finish it off with a night with the parents.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So we talked earlier about food deserts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's an important component.
And there's actually even a more nuanced way to refer to it, which is as a food apartheid, because a desert is a natural ecosystem
that
occurs naturally, and whereas an apartheid is a human-made social and political construct.
Yeah, you nailed that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, it's
because a food desert is benign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But an apartheid signals deliberate lack of investment mm-hmm. in communities.
So how do you overcome that?
Oh, there's so many ways. I mean, there's policy, which is really important. Mm-hmm. There's education on the individual level. There's making the right and good choice an easier choice. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are so many examples of grocery stores trying, like a recent example, a grocery store that really worked hard to establish itself in West Oakland and had to close due to lack of sales. And, you know, it was also pandemically related, but it's really hard when you have poverty concentrated in certain neighborhoods and a decades-long lack of investment, mm-hmm. and you have people who don't own cars and they have to drive long distances to get to food. And so farmers markets are one important solution mm-hmm. to that, but they're certainly not the only solution.
Another dynamic, I was just in Springfield, Missouri, and one of their cutting edge is the renaissance of the neighborhood market, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. corner market. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
There are a lot of initiatives in San Francisco right now about making corner stores have more fresh produce available to them. So it's not just the place to pick up cigarettes and alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. But that because it is, it's like the bodega. It's the neighborhood store where people are buying just what they need for the next few days. And how can you also include fresh produce? But it's challenging. It's perishable. Mm-hmm. It needs to be refrigerated. We're also used to cosmetic perfection and everything looking lovely. And that's one of the nice things about the farmers market is over time you learn to realize that it's not about uniformity or cosmetic perfection, but it's about flavor.
That's really cool. Okay, more. We talked about kids, mm-hmm. elementary kids, but you have educational programs for
teenagers, too. It's a deeper investment in a smaller number of students, but it's a combination of workforce development and personal development, and all through the lens of food, so they're learning about food justice while they're growing food in their school gardens, while they're also working at the farmer's market and getting integrated into our programming. And that's really gratifying because...
How do you deconstruct and translate food justice for the kids?
Oh, that's another one of those really complicated questions that I wish I had a more simplified answer to. Food justice is connected to a lot of issues. I think we talk about like environmental redlining.
Neighborhoods. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So food justice is about food sovereignty. It's about being able to grow your own food, feed yourself, know about food. It's also about really kind of looking at the larger systems and issues. It's something that someone could spend an entire mm-hmm. college career learning about.
PhD mm-hmm. for
But
sure.
I think for our program, it's about helping students to understand that where they are is not was not by accident, and that they do have agency and choice in trying to make it better. Mm-hmm. So whether that's advocating for better food in their schools or having a school garden or even having better job pathways to higher paying jobs that are in food and agriculture. The program tries to do a lot. We try to expose the students to a lot of things.
Has cafeteria food in school districts improved?
Yes, it actually has. I mean, I think the Bay Area has such a deep investment. Food is really tied to our culture here. In fact, even when I moved to San Francisco 20 years ago, I marveled at how after a dinner party, everyone talked about what they ate, dish by dish, course by course. And I remembered the conversations that I had with people or what they were wearing or the mood or the music. I didn't remember the food course by course, but that's how much people paid attention to it. And it was surprising. So I think that food culture really matters. And also, we do grow 65% of the fruits and vegetables that the United States consumes. And so this is, you know, it's not a far stretch. It's kind of an embarrassment of riches in California.
And how about the people, though, like high school kids? Mm-hmm. Do you get feedback that they actually started growing some of their own
produce? Yeah, and especially that they really do want to learn how to cook for themselves. I think that empowerment piece is really important. The gardening is as much about nurturing themselves, learning that caring for a plant is like caring for your own personhood, and that time out in nature and your hands in the soil. I think that's more what they take away, is that kind of quiet contemplative time, more so than they learn like, I know how to be a farmer now. Right. I think it's just more like I can connect to the natural world
so
better.
So therapeutic
element. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here you are, here I am at Green's Restaurant tonight. There's a reason why you're here.
Well, we were lucky. Green's asked us if we wanted to be, our organization, if we wanted to be a beneficiary of this dinner series. And I love that this dinner series is pairing Green's, an established, well-known restaurant, with chefs that are less well-known, that have a different cuisine style, and they're working together collaboratively. And I think those collaborations are what we see more and more often.
Interesting.
Yeah. I really love it because we have a really close relationship with the chef community in the Bay Area, because our farmers, the farms that sell at our farmers market, have such high quality and pay such attention to the variety of the produce that they grow, that we have been able to cultivate these great relationships with the chef community over the nearly 30 years we've been running farmers markets. And so, you know, that it's their church when the chefs come to the farmers market. This is when they get to see each other. The rest of the time they're working so hard in their own kitchens. At the farmers market is when chef to chef, as they're pushing their cart around piled high with boxes and overflowing with produce, that they actually get to connect to one another, and that's really nice. So I feel like being invited to be a beneficiary of this dinner series is as much about an acknowledgement of the way the chef community is a very collaborative community in the Bay Area.
That's really cool. So back to farmers.
Did you remember your question?
A little, no, it's long gone.
Long gone. Yeah. Okay, back to farmers market.
It follows, just reading between the lines, that you have a presence there to meet and interact with the public. Talk to us about that.
So our organization started because we understood that you can't just create a marketplace and have it succeed without education, but you also need that commercial marketplace for small family farmers to thrive financially. So the average age of a farmer in California is 59. It's a retiring population.
That's bad
yeah,
news,
and when you think about how long it takes to learn how to farm and how much we need to be supporting younger farmers, and also supporting farmers who are moving from farm worker to farm owner. So first generation farmers, immigrant owned farms, LGBTQI farms, we really have made a priority to highlight farmers that are reflective of the communities who are shopping there. So there's a lot that goes behind putting the market together.
That's really fascinating stuff.
It is.
Yeah. Back to the Greens.
Okay.
Have a presence here during this time, right? How do you guys have a physical presence?
Well, Greens has long been associated with the San Francisco Zen Center, and they have a garden that used to sell in our market. So for many years, the Zen Center's little farm would sell, and their vegetables truly like emanated like joy and peace, literally like sparkled. People would be asking us, when is Green Gulch coming back? That was the name of the farm, Green Gulch. When are they coming back? Our shoppers regularly were used to it. And they only recently, pre-pandemic, decided to no longer sell at the farmer's market. But that's how that relationship started, is Green's restaurant is connected to the San Francisco Zen Center that has a farm called Green Gulch that sold at our market. It's all connected.
I love it.
Can't like pull one thread out without it, you know, pulling
unraveling,
a lot of other pieces.
Yeah,
exactly.
Very cool. Okay, anything you want to add, your turn.
That's a hard one.
I know, but you know all the secrets.
Oh, our food choices matter. I mean, food is connected to everything. It's culture, it's identity, it's how we show love and care for one another. It's who has affluence and power and who doesn't. I mean, food is truly, literally connected to every part of the human condition. And I think it's wonderful to celebrate it and to share it. And it's also important to acknowledge the implications of it and put your energy accordingly. And that really does matter where you get your food, and supporting small-scale farmers. It's connected to climate change and climate adaptation and keeping farming as a viable occupation in California. Like, it's that thread that once you start pulling it, it's connected to everything else.
And provenance is really everything, especially with additives and pesticides and whatnot, and knowing where your food comes from.
I just think about how much happier and healthier I feel when I sit down to a meal that either I've made, or I know the person who's made it, or I know where the food, I can connect the food to a sense of place and taste and a face. Mm-hmm. And I think those things really matter. And they nourish me.
I love going out picking my own strawberries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you picks are great. Our organization loves taking people out to the farms. There's nothing like walking the land to really give a sense of how hard the work is, mm-hmm. and why you really shouldn't waste your food. Like when you go home, don't let it rot in the fridge because it's truly precious.
To learn more about your world, mm-hmm. where do you go to website or where would you direct
foodwise.org.
That's simple.
It is. Yeah. We used to have a really complicated long name, and we just changed it last year, and I'm so grateful. It's much easier now. Yeah, it was a lot. It was this 19-syllable acronym, Center for Urban Education About Sustainable Agriculture. Not succinct. Foodwise is great.
Yeah.
It's food and education. And that wisdom is in the community. I think that's one of the biggest shifts, is that it's not us, this top-down organization, teaching the great masses that don't know anything. It's at the wisdom's in the community already. Christine Farron.
And I'm Tom Wilmer. We'll see you here at the Greens on the waterfront in San Francisco.
I'm Hina Patel, co-owner and executive chef at my restaurant called Besharam. My restaurant in San Francisco. I am there since 2019.
Mm-hmm. You opened just in time for COVID, didn't you?
Wow, just before COVID. So I experienced my highest highs and lowest low mm-hmm. in very, very short amount of time.
Mm, but you found a way to stay open throughout COVID, right?
It was important mm-hmm. for me because so much livelihood depend on that restaurant. And we were all trying to figure out what's happening as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going through the phrases of what next for Besharam, what next for me.
Let's go back in time. When you were a young girl, you were in India.
Hmm.
Your mother taught you cooking?
She did. Mm-hmm. First 20 years of my life, I spent in India. My mom is the biggest influence in me learning around the cooking, shadowing her. She wanted me to learn basic skills of cooking, so after marriage, I can impress my family. So there was always thinking in my mom's, as a girl, you have to know how to cook. So I never enjoyed cooking with my mom. She's the best of the teacher. That influence taught me a lot and made me a better chef at this time in my life.
Mm-hmm. So at some point, you left India. And you came to America?
Yes, I left India in 1987, met my husband in London, and we moved here in 92 after staying 5 years in London.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my food traveled with me as well. My food evolved with me, with my life journey. So what I serve at my restaurant represents my life journey. Tom, my menu itself divided into the regions of India, particularly state of Gujarat and Maharashtra, mm-hmm. where I traveled myself. So I want my guests, as soon as they see the menu, I'm giving them the culinary trip based on my life. The food I grew up with, I eat different than my mom, but I love that twist that comes with using the local ingredients.
Mm-hmm. But India is such a big country, mm. north to south, that you can have very different sourcing of raw materials,
Yes.
And spices and seasonings would change.
So my cuisine based on west part of India, which is a little different than north and south.
Mm-hmm.
Like you, there are representation for North Indian, South Indian, but not much about the state of Gujarat, Gujarati cuisine. My cuisine itself is over 5,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm doing right now is a fraction of it. It's so much rich in technique, in traditions, and that values I try to recreate in my menu, because that's the one we're missing right now. When we go, there has to be an emotional connection of what we put in our mouth. And I get delighted when I talk about each dishes when I ate first time and brings the memory to me. And I want that same connection when my guest eat that dish, how that comes to their mind or nostalgia into their own memory or in their own life.
Interesting, because you'd have different memories associated with the same food.
I feel like it's always the pleasant memories we have with the food. If I'm recreating, it's always the good food we have, never the bad taste.
Right, so. Intrinsic and critical in that is aroma of the food. Your nose isn't working, you have no taste. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. Mm-hmm. That's so true. My food speaks my language. It gave me a voice to connect with the guest who I never met before. Mm-hmm. And having them eating my dishes I grew up with, there is an instant connection. And I love that.
There's a universality too. Because there's no language barrier.
No language barrier.
Yeah.
Tom, I had to learn so much when I moved here with the language, but with the culture or with the food, no family other than my children and my husband. So you try to connect and be a part of the community, and cooking more and more the food I grew up with made me more part of where I belong. And this is my home. I'm here over 30 years in San Francisco. So
where is your restaurant in the city? Where is it located?
In Dog Patch.
Dog Patch.
It's outskirts of city. It's more quieter, but it's more community based. That's what I like.
Yeah, and that's interesting thing about San Francisco. It really is a conglomeration of neighborhoods, little towns within a big town.
Yeah, and I realized people stay in their own town, where even in the little inner circles we have.
Yeah, that follows. You have a regular following from the neighborhood. Yeah?
Absolutely. You know, I know accolades, or having said, I won this means a lot. But having this business, repeat guest coming second, coming third time, craving my food is the best accolade you can have. And that's the survive in this competitive business with the repeat business when they miss my food.
That's really cool. Are there certain signature dishes that people come back because of what they remembered from their... Give us an example of some of the iconic signature dishes that people love.
Yeah, so I have few. But to start with, I have a dish called dal dhokli. So it's dal, it's made with coconut and lime broth. And dhokli is, back home, my mom made hand-rolled rotis cooked in a broth. I change it to our hodo yuba sheets. So made it more lighter, gluten-free. But I love how it came about. I have a very good memory. I asked my mom to make it extra so I can have it next day or the day after.
Yeah, so it's better. Huh?
It's so much better. And I love the dal, how the broth of the dal gives the deeper taste to this. And having the hodo yuba, you never had it in that broth. It brings the two cultures together. And I topped it with my hand-pressed noodles, called their crunch. With right now, seasonally, I put deep-fried sweet potato fries, straws. It's amazing. I wish you can try right now.
I will see you there. Yeah, I'd love to come. That'd be great. So tell us about another classic that people demand and you would have protests if you took off the menu.
Oh my God, you are so right. I grew up in a middle-class family. I never experienced fine dining growing up, but street food played a major part in my eating outside the home. My mom was amazing cook. We never slept hungry. She has ability to use same ingredient in different ways, and that has a lot of input in my what I do right now. One of the comes kichu, which is a very simple dish, very few ingredients. I don't even know if I describe you. You said, what is this?
Yeah,
this
is
doesn't
it?
Sound that. But that dish, I have an open kitchen. After the guests have that dish, they come up to me on the line and they say how much memory they have that dish. Even that dish, you won't find that in India because it's so common. Or you can make it at home. Why you have it at the restaurant? I put that simple dish just because it brings pleasure to me, and the same thing does to all my guests. And that called kichu. Kichu is a rice flour cooked with the spices. that simple is that. My mom made that, and she rolled that dough, made a cracker out of that. So I served this dish in a simple small bowl with the rice savory dough on top with the cracker, and that's it. And some pickling spice, but that, I tried to took it off, Tom.
Yeah,
and people said, why? I came back for that dish, so I had to put it back in.
How funny. Mandatory.
Yes.
Give us another classic that people come for.
The whole menu based on my memory with the food growing up. So other dish is kanji vada, which is tapioca fritters. I love that dish. When my mom made it whenever we fast, I remember eating it just like not by dozens. So I had to have that on my menu. So I have a prefix menu for the chef's kind of a menu, and I want guests to have that dish on a special menu. So that one another dish. We have tapioca here as a dessert, as a pudding, but I grew up eating in a savory form, and I wanted to highlight that note.
That's really cool. How about greens and salads? Talk to us about that for a moment.
So when Katie Richard reached out for this collab, that made me really excited, because look around, this place is has so much history, such an iconic place. Even I remember.
And we're at the Greens right now.
We are at the Greens right now. And this opportunity to cook or to have the as a guest chef next to other female chef made a lot to me. It was important for me to come and just to do more of this.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And talk to us about dessert. What do you specialize? What are some of your favorite desserts that you make?
I have right now two or three desserts which I am really fond of. We call Shrikhand cheesecake. Back home, my mom made Shrikhand with the hung yogurt overnight. Next day, she whip up the yogurt, putting sugar, saffron, cardamom. That's it. I love that, the simplicity of it. Sometimes it's hard to be simple and elegant. And I take a pride in that, keeping the ingredients less, but something that stays with you. So I capture the same flavor in a cheesecake. I have a Shrikhand cheesecake with saffron and cardamom flavored cheesecake.
You do know you're making me hungry.
I can't wait to have you. For the base for the cheesecake, there is a household cookie called glucose biscuit. I crush those cookies and use that. So the combination of nostalgia for people to realize what my culture is, where I come from, my food value. So the simple cheesecake represent who I am.
You've gotten some accolades. I understand that you were a James Beard nominee, correct? When was that?
That was this year.
Wow, right now?
Yeah.
So you must have been really flattered, huh?
I just felt like I never been to culinary school. And what I do right now is I'm late in my game. I'm 57 years old. Doing this first time, what makes me happy, and somebody else to say you are on a right path, it makes you feel like yes.
Yeah.
It makes
affirmation.
Yeah. So that means a lot for them to say what you're doing is impressive.
But then you have your fond following of regulars who love what you do, obviously.
I mean, that's the only way to survive.
Again, where are you located? What area of San Francisco?
I'm in the outskirts of city of San Francisco, the area called Dog Patch. I'm right in the middle of that. We have plenty, bountiful of parking space around me. It's a community-based restaurant.
Nice. And the name of the restaurant again?
Name of the restaurant is Besharam. The name itself is a guiding light for me. It means shameless.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I wanted to tell myself, I have to be shameless to reach where I am. I have to be hustling. Nothing falls on my lap, but every opportunity that comes within in front of me, I use that to the best to provide for my family. And that's the story of the first immigrant. I'm a first immigrant, and I will do anything to belong here, to provide to my family, And being Besharam or being shameless, that's the only way to make it happen.
That's great. We're here at the Greens, known as a vegetarian restaurant. Mm-hmm. You started out in your early career, you used meat in your dishes, but something happened. What changed and why?
So being a chef is a journey. And you trying to find yourself where I want to lead my Besharam. Like everybody else, during COVID, we all have a time to reflect on ourselves. And that gave me a little more time where what is the next step for me and my Besharam. And after 2021, when I opened after the COVID, I decided to change my whole cuisine to vegetarian.
Mm-hmm. Why? What was the reason?
I'm vegetarian to begin myself. And Gujarat, the state of Gujarat, is most of, I grew up as a vegetarian. My parents, grandparents, everybody in our family is vegetarian. So turning my cuisine to vegetarian, that was natural to me.
It was easy, huh?
Was easy.
Yeah.
And it's straightforward, that goes with my story. It was scary because you had to somehow there is a stigma attached to vegetarian. You can't charge. Why am I paying $35 for a dish? They don't realize what it takes to prepare those vegetables. It may not cost as a prime rib, but to bring that vegetable or give them a how many hands touches that vegetable in front of before 5 o'clock. I try to cook vegetables with different textures. Like okra, I like crispy. Bitter melon, I like stuffed. Those are the flavors you may not be familiar, but I grew up with. And I like to play with that texture and the flavor other than make them overcook or undercook. When Katie asked me to be a guest chef.
I was just going to ask you about that. That's right now, you're guest chef at the Greens. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Green Restaurant is been known to serve vegetarian food, right? It highlights where we come from, what food we grow, and very exciting for me to come here and eat. And something I'm similar doing at my restaurant, bringing the Gujarati cuisine to a light. People know about North and South, but not too much about the West part of India where I'm from.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with North and South, but not West.
Yeah.
Interesting. Why do you think that is?
There is not much representation. There is not chefs cooking out, and there is a void. That's why I opened this restaurant and collaborating with Greens and focusing and talking about my cuisine with Katie, it feels like such a good fit.
To learn more about your world, do you have, where are you on Instagram, or where does somebody find out about you? Website?
So we are such a mom and pop restaurant. I'm in the back of the house as a chef. My husband runs the front of the house as a manager, and my children, they run the social media. Find me at Besharam SF as my Instagram handle. I need more followers. Please follow me.
There you go. We can do that.
Yes, and
do you have a website too?
I do have a website called besharamsf.com.
Excellent.
Yeah? Thank you. My name is Hina Patel. I am the co-owner and chef at a restaurant called Besharam.
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco, Dock Beach area.
Love it. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Greens Restaurant right on the waterfront in San Francisco. We'll see you here.
My name is Adiam Tagai. I'm a chef owner, Mela Bistro. I'm born and raised in Tigray, northern Ethiopia.
Wow, that's a long way from home.
Yes. Wow.
Give us a signature dish in Ethiopian cuisine.
Ethiopian cuisine is very diverse, it's very colorful, but my favorite one is from my town home, Tigray, and it's more like vegetarian, vegan friendly, and I love the vegetarian platter, which we'll serve today as a third course.
Oh, cool.
And a combination of from legumes, like lentil, yellow split peas, from fresh vegetable, and all the herbs and stuff that I grew up eating and incorporating with what California provides.
So you get your proteins through your legumes, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is really important.
Yes. I'm not vegetarian, but I tend to.
But for those who are,
yes,
yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And vegetarian food is not boring.
Where is your restaurant?
It's 35 Grand Avenue in Oakland Uptown.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
And again, whereabouts Uptown Oakland?
Grand Avenue. It's the restaurant destination, pretty much. I think we're surrounded by Calavera, Alamar, and many, many great small restaurants.
And that wasn't the case 15 years ago, huh?
That wasn't.
It was no restaurants.
There. Yes. Yeah.
Car dealers.
Yes. It's changing. Oakland is becoming its melting pot, and I love the diversity, how the community open to learn about your food, culture. There's a nonprofit organization that says no spice, no immigrant, no spice. So it's truly Oakland highlights, and I think the whole Bay Area.
That's funny.
Yes.
Yeah, I just spent a couple of weeks in Uptown and downtown Oakland. And they call Oakland the town and San Francisco the city. I mean, there's a reason.
There's a reason.
Yeah, because it's very, very much friendly town feeling there.
It's very friendly. And I think my first business was around 2005, 2006. I used to have Wallen Hall Cafe, but people are really supporting into small business, diversity, and it just like, whatever your background is, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. And you really feel it as a tourist or as a business owner or as a community.
And so your specific flavor and a new thing in downtown
It's a
Oakland,
new
yeah.
thing, and people are give you the platform mm-hmm. to do better, to incorporate with things and to elevate your cuisine.
Mm-hmm. And I bet there's that curiosity that draws people in too.
Yes.
That aren't familiar with the ethnic cuisine. Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit more about some of your signature dishes that you enjoy making.
So when you eat it, we eat as a communal dining and platter. Mm-hmm. So you cannot single it out. But if I have to single it out, it's the red lentil spice, because I grew up preparing the spices with my mom, the Burberry sauce, which is that's the signature in every spice we use. Mm-hmm. And that reminds me of back home.
And talk to us about hands-on dining, too.
It's hands-on.
Because that's really central, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so natural. And I think food tastes better when you eat it with your bare hand. It's natural. And it's just like, I think you're appreciating your nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the kind of delivery vehicle is your bread, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It offers some technique, but I think people, especially in the Bay Area, I'm surprised how they're, adapt quickly and enjoy. I see them, people like devouring, but long time ago, you see them taking one bite and then using a napkin, but now people are like more comfortable, and I see them eating it like traditional,
That's really cool. Yeah, I personally, that's my favorite.
Yes.
Yeah. Skip the middleman, deal direct.
Yep.
Yeah. A little bit more about your philosophy of cuisine.
Yeah, my philosophy is it's very simple, and then use what we have, and I do not like to process things, eat it, especially for my vegetarian cuisine. You have it all there. And then mixing two cultures, I always like to incorporate things. And I always like to bring what I grew up eating and then what I am right now in Oakland. And you see all the spices and whatever I can bring from back home. I think simple, clean, and incorporate with the farmers what they can give us. Seasonal is my favorite things.
That's really cool. And dessert is a whole nother discovery, right?
Yes, actually, traditionally, we're the only nation. We do not have appetizer and desserts, but using the teff grain, which is nutritious, it's gluten-free, and I just came up with that idea, and people love it.
That's really cool. Yeah. So fresh produce, obviously central to your cuisine and what you do. Where do you source?
We're from, actually, our restaurant is very small, and then I like to go around from farmers market. I live in the East Bay, mm-hmm. and my favorite farmers market is in Kensington. Also, we have in Pinole, mm-hmm. and I just like to go grab. I've been going to farmers market since I was 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
And that's the best thing you can get, and make sure I always go at to later hours so mm-hmm. they do not go back with boxes and boxes, so
yeah.
that's the best thing.
And I've never been there because it's only open at night, but the produce market, right, in
yes.
Oakland, have you ever been in there?
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's also the farmer's market.
So you source in?
Yes.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Share your secrets. Something you're most proud of.
I think I'm proud, like, opening a restaurant, coming from a country that barely people know, and then dream. I think that's American dream. And then my proudest moment is moving to California, that I will be celebrated. And then even our restaurants like always in the top, and people are like learning. Not only food is, I think for me, food is an international language,
mm-hmm.
and it can take you to a different destination. So that's presenting my cuisine as my proudest.
And again, your uptown Oakland restaurant name is the name of the restaurant?
Mela Bistro.
Before we go, let's go back in time. Where were you a little girl?
I was born and raised in Ethiopia.
Okay.
And my family are from northern part of Ethiopia, Tigray. And every summer, my family used to take us to Tigray. And that's when I grew love for vegetarian and for the farming and everything, for fresh produce. Love starts.
So that's been a part of your life forever.
It is, since I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm. And how did you immigrate, come to America with your family or by yourself?
Well, I have my older brothers here already, and mm-hmm. then I came here to live and to continue my education with them.
And they're in the East Bay in Oakland?
No, everybody's in East Coast.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So what happened? You had to balance out the continent? Why?
Balance? Well, I got married and have to move to California, but that's when really my culinary journey starts.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to come to your restaurant.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd love to host you.
I look forward to it. To learn more about your world.
MelaBistro.com and 35 Grand Avenue, Oakland, California. My name is Adiam Tagay, chef owner, Mela Bistro.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We'll see you in Uptown Oakland.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website foundation@hearstcastle.com to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer on KCBX Radio. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
High brown from down the levee, all misfits putting on the wrist. Why, that's where each and every Lulu Bell goes every Thursday evening with her swell bow rubbing elbows. Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the wrist.